Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sports Report. We are your host. I am Ben Meredith.
And I am also Ben Meredith.
Welcome to another episode. Today we are going to be talking about the college basketball world as things tend to be heating up as we near conference play. Some NFL action thrown in there as well, along with some college football, some playoffs, along with some scheduling in the ACC, which I'm very curious to see your opinion on, Dad. And then we have some high school sports mixed in there as well. So first, let's jump right in with some college basketball. The Tar Heels picking up two wins this week, one against ETSU and the other against Ohio State. What were your thoughts on this one? The major impact was Seth Trimble coming back for the game against Ohio State, which proved to be a big difference as he had, I think, 16 points?
17.
17 points. So what was your thoughts on the game that took place yesterday afternoon?
Yeah, it was definitely a game that we needed to win in terms of momentum, and you know, we needed to get things done and get the victory, and we did do that. There were some times during the game where, you know, we looked like we fell asleep and let them claw back into it. But at the end of the day, people are going to look back on this win with the mindset of it's a power conference win. It's a, you know, who knows whether or not Ohio State will continue to be a quad one. But either way, they're going to look back at it. It's going to be a good win on the resume. At times it was ugly. It was really great to have Seth back. The stat line looks really impressive for Caleb Wilson, even though he honestly struggled. I think in the first half he was 0-for his free throw attempts. And just kind of looked meh. But by the end of the game, he had 20 points and a double-double. And so great rebounding effort. When the ball's not going in the basket the way you want it to, he still fights. And that was excellent to see. So, yeah, all told, I think a great win. Not going to be anything that people point to as evidence one way or another for Carolina's greatness. But it does – it looks really good on paper. You know, you beat ETSU, and it's like, well, of course you beat ETSU. And then you beat Ohio State, and it's like, oh, well, they beat a Big Ten school, and they, you know. So yeah. I'm excited about the win and excited about conference play, obviously, after we play one more non-conference game. But, yeah, I'm super excited to have Seth back. He fought hard. He played hard. He dove too much for my – personal preference, because you've got a hurt arm.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of hollering at the TV every time he dove after something, like,
mentally,
no,
you kept
don't
it
do
good.
That
you kept it good, like the outside didn't scream. Yeah. Much internally we were both
internal screaming.
Yeah, internal screaming for sure. But yeah, one major kind of takeaway I saw from this was Luka Bogovac sitting on the bench for a decent portion of the second half. This surprised me a little bit. I think it kind of shows you how Hubert Davis feels in regards when you have guards like Dixon, Trimble, and Kyan Evans on the floor. And then you put in, you add Trimble to that mix with Evans and Dixon, there's going to be an odd man out. They decided to go with kind of the two forwards, one true big, and then two guards look, instead of going with the Bogovac, who's, I don't know if you classify him as a wing or a guard. He's got the height of a wing with the skill set of a guard, kind of. So, but kind of questioned that. I've seen a lot of that on social media. I know you don't really pay attention to much social media coaching.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a little bit. I think that it's a pretty simple equation for Hubert Davis. If you make impacts, you stay in the game. And we had Powell making impacts, and we had Dixon making impacts in the previous games and in practice and things like that. And so, I'm not concerned. I think Luka coming off the bench is just fine, if that's what ends up happening. But he did still start. He did still play significant minutes, but the ball wasn't going in the basket. And anytime you're making mistakes that cost, you know, turn into turnovers and things like that, you know, I think I'm not at all concerned if I'm Luka that, you know, somebody's going to get my starting spot, because he does provide so much leadership and value on the court. But, yeah, I think Hubert has forgotten more basketball than I've ever known And so I definitely trust his judgment on when to sit him and when to not sit him.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how he utilizes those three guards plus Luka plus Stevenson plus Powell.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you've got Vassar and Caleb Wilson. I'm curious to see how he utilizes those 8-9 guys
mm-hmm.
when you deal with that equation when you're playing against a Duke or a Louisville or a NC State. But even if you want to look in the more near future, Florida State next week.
Right.
Which is more important at this exact time than Duke in February.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I really was impressed by this win. I thought that they played good, but what were your thoughts on the ETSU game?
I mean, ETSU's a solid squad. I was impressed by their, they got us to play the game they wanted to play. You know, they were kind of an excruciating offense to watch because they would go down to the last, I mean, we heard the shot clock buzzer dozens of times,
yeah.
in this game. Sometimes it was an actual shot clock violation, but most of the time it was them waiting until the very end and putting up either a good shot or a desperation heave because our defense did their job. Not the most fun team to watch, but man, they did what they wanted to do in the first half for sure. I think, you know, Carolina's more gifted athletically and is going to pull away at some point. And that last 2 to 3 minutes of the first half, maybe 4 minutes of the first half, going into the beginning of the second half, you're not going to be able, when it was like they decided, oh, now we're going to actually play. And so I would love to see the team not have that turn it off, turn it on kind of mentality against even lesser opponents. But you're not going to take much away from that game in terms of like how good is this team.
Yeah.
But you might take away how focused is this team, because you can play to a standard whether or not you're playing Duke or ETSU. The great news is you're gonna play to that standard when you play against Duke 90% of the time, just because of the energy in the room is different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the ETSU game, it's another one that's going to be forgettable in the long term. It's nothing like the Kansas game or the Kentucky game or, you know, those sorts of wins that people are going to point at the end of the season. But, you know, they got out there, they got it done against a team that was, I thought, really well coached and really well executed their plan, especially in the first half. Once they got tired, they had less of the ability to execute what they wanted to do.
Absolutely agree with that. Another thing, Seth Trimble in the Ohio State game. I was listening to the Jones Angel call for the game because I was on my way home from a middle school basketball game, which we'll get to later. And Seth missed a three-pointer, mm-hmm. and early in the first half when it was like, I think we didn't even have 10 points yet because Henry would later make a three to make it 10. And he said something like, that was like 2 for 14 mm-hmm. for Seth's shooting going back into last season because he hadn't shot 14 attempts
right.
this season because he'd been out for 8-9 games.
Mm-hmm.
But then he came back and he had like 3 or 4 triples in the second half, which yeah. were all huge in a one-point win. And then another thing, I'm going to kind of paraphrase something that Adam Lucas said on the Carolina Insider on Friday. He was talking about ETSU. He's like, ETSU is a team that will sneak into March Madness, whether it's as a back of the room at large bid or a conference champion. You don't want to see that team as a 14 seed if you're a Kentucky.
Right.
And so I think that tells you, you know, I'm curious how many of these teams that we've played, whether it's NC Central or Radford, who are NCAA tournament teams. I think obviously Kentucky, I think Kansas is going to be a top 5 seed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious to see where those other mid-majors go, like an East Carolina in the American, or like those other teams. Ohio State could be anywhere between a 10 seed and a 5 seed. You have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very curious to see how this one goes. And we have a couple more things to talk about in college basketball. First, the Kansas-NC State game. They played sometime the past 2 weeks. Councils for Kansas having a career day with 36 points. His missed free throws at the end kept the game close, and that was either in overtime or in regulation. NC State, I so disagreed with this call that they made. Late game. Have you seen the highlights of this game?
I have not.
Okay.
So late, I saw some reaction to it on social media.
Late game, there was a foul called. Alen Breed was trying to stop the clock, as you do in late game situations, trying to stop the clock, commits a foul. He gets elbowed in the top of, like, in his forehead because the Kansas guard was trying to escape from him and kind of just throws an elbow on accident, hits him in the head. This reminded me a lot of Brady Manek in the 2022 game against Baylor in the round of 32, where they called it a flagrant two, and no one in the state of North Carolina agreed with that call. I think most of the state of North Carolina disagreed with this one as well. They still called it a common foul on the
state
guard, which I thought was absolute garbage. And Will Wade was hot about it. He was not happy.
He does tend to be hot.
Yeah, and so they went and shot free throws. I thought they missed lots of fouls that should have been called against or on the Jayhawks that would have brought this game close. And then Vinal Lubin, our favorite former Tar Heel, had 16 and 11, as well as Williams, who had 17. Williams being the, I believe, the one who we talked about at one point having the adorable reaction to Kerwin Walton and all that. So. Yeah, that's all I have for NC State. I'm assuming you don't have much to say about that.
I actually have some NC State things I would like to discuss. What? So the viral clip of Will Wade after the game, I don't know which game it was, but basically talking about how this is not kindergarten and he doesn't care if you have a 3.0 because this is not kindergarten. This is and then he goes on essentially like a 5-minute rant about the lack of toughness on his team. And I found myself just sitting there mouth open watching him just absolutely toss his players under the bus. Now, I get it. I certainly understand. When your team is not playing tough and you are frustrated about it, yeah, be super frustrated about it. But that's not press conference material.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
That's locker room material. Because, you know, Will Wade had a very publicized Navy SEAL boot camp at the beginning of the season or in the off season, where he literally had them crawling through mud and doing Navy SEAL things, right, to toughen them up.
Wild.
Which, again, that's awesome. I have no beef with a coach trying to teach his kids toughness by any means necessary that are legal. That's awesome. But then when that strategy clearly failed, which I don't know if it's failed. I haven't watched much NC State basketball at all other than some highlights I've seen online. But if your strategy fails of toughening up your team, according to your opinion, because he clearly thinks it did, The move is not to then go to the press and whine about
your coaching,
how not tough your team is. One of the things that I most appreciated about Dean Smith, then Bill Guthridge, then
Daugherty.
Roy Williams, Daugherty a little bit, and I think honestly this is one of the reasons why Daugherty didn't work out as well, is because he tended toward the opposite of this, but now Hubert Davis also does this extremely well, is you own the failures of your team publicly, and you distribute the credit for successes back to your team. When we fail, Hubert Davis will sit in front of a microphone and say, "That's on me. That's bad coaching. That's, you know," he will call out lack of focus, lack of attention to details, like whatever, but then he always puts that little caveat in there, like, and that's on me. I'm their coach. I'm supposed to do that. And I was waiting. I watched the whole clip. Of course, it was a social media clip. I didn't see the whole interview. But I was waiting for Will Wade to say, and that's, at the end of the day, that's on me. He never did. He basically said, my team's soft, and I'm really concerned about it. And then,
as you should be concerned about it, but you
absolutely
should still
be concerned. But when it comes to press time, you are accepting the blame and distributing the credit. And mm-hmm. he didn't do that. And I found that to be interesting. I got into a couple of little Twitter beefs with some NC State people.
Yes.
Because I responded to that. My response was the Julius Campbell quote from Remember the Titans, attitude reflect leadership, Captain. If they're not tough, attitude reflect leadership, Captain. And so that was my comment, and that led to some lighthearted back and forth between me and some State fans. But yeah, it's I found that to be really interesting. I do think Will Wade is doing a good job of demonstrating what it looks like to be concerned. But that's locker room talk, my brother. You need to be you need to be furious in the locker room, and maybe they need to do a in-season boot camp or something. I don't know. But you're not going to fix that problem. I just couldn't help thinking, as a State player, watching my coach go to the national media or local media, any media, it's international at this point because of cell phones and distribution channels. I could not imagine being motivated to be more tough by that, unless you
absolutely
were
not.
I think he said Vin Allen Lubin and one other guy that he was Q. I think he said, I don't know who Q is because I don't watch enough
it's
NC
the,
State basketball.
He was one of the guys who came over from, I don't know his name, but he's one of the guys who came over from the McNeese State team.
And so
he's
yeah.
really good. I like him a
yeah,
lot.
So absolutely call out the guys that are playing tough, but you could leave out the rest of the team is soft. and I'm not running a daycare here like that. I don't see how that's going to motivate your team. Yep. And honestly, as a North Carolina fan, I want NC State to be good. I know. I don't want them to win, but I want them to be good.
That's not a common trait right there for a Tar Heel fan.
I want them to be nationally relevant because I think Tobacco Road's the best place in the world to play basketball.
Absolutely.
And so just like I'm never going to cheer for Duke, I secretly don't mind when they're top five because I would much rather play a top five Duke team than to play garbage because they aren't relevant nationally. So
yeah.
I want the Tobacco Road rivalries to be good, and that includes Wake Forest. I want all of them to be good teams. And so I am pulling for you, Will Wade, to toughen up your team, but maybe let's have that as an internal conversation with individuals who are not tough.
We've got another excuse maker in the ACC. Mike Krzyzewski, you are not missed any longer.
That's right.
But
Coach
yes.
K was just remarkably bad at post-game interviews. He could not bring himself. Now, again, I think Coach K, clearly the results show that he's a good coach. But, man, he was bad at post-game interviews.
Oh, yeah.
He would... on losses, post-game interviews after losses. After victories,
oh,
it was pretty easy, you know. But after losses, he would blame it on the fact that Zion hurt his foot or, you know, whatever. And it's just like, man, come on.
I thought it was hilarious. So there are multiple examples, or two of them that come into my mind. The loss to North Carolina, the illustrious year of Zion, when he got hurt, he blew out his knee or whatever, and when he was trying to dribble. And in the interview, he goes, it's kind of wild that in every home loss, Zion got hurt. And
yeah,
and even the fans, I remember this is, I consider 2019 my first year of basketball because I was the only guy North Carolina basketball fan. There's another girl in the class who's a North Carolina basketball fan, surrounded by Duke basketball fans. And the teacher was a UVA fan, which was hilarious because they won it that year.
Mm-hmm.
And just every week, man, it was like, oh, did you see Zion jump from the other side of the paint? And then it was, oh, well, we're losing because Zion got hurt. I'm like, mm-hmm. You'll have four other All-Americans. Whatever.
Right.
But anyways, and then there's the other one where March 5th, 2022, the best day of my life, some may call it. The
relatable.
The first thing he says in the interview was not, thank you to the fans, good job, Tar Heels. Was that is unacceptable.
Yep.
And we are sorry. And God.
I knew in defense of Coach K.
He's not wrong.
It was unacceptable. And that actually was him owning it. You know, like yeah. that credit where it's due. I thought at the end of that game and at the end of the next game, which was also acceptable while we're on the topic, I was pretty impressed with his reaction there, because he was viewing it through the lens of his legacy. And, like, he knew this is the last time I'm ever going to do it. So he stayed out on that court and shook hands with people at the end of the very last game. So credit where it's due. But as a whole, in total, his post-game – I mean, it's why he stopped doing those post-game interviews, the ones on the court. He started sending Shire 2-3 years before the end of his coaching career. That's hilarious. And he said it was, you know, so that Shire gets some experience with the media. Yeah. But, man, I think it was a brilliant move, because he was just so remarkably bad at talking to the media.
He
did
was
not have an internal filter on, you know, he did that Will Wade thing where you just blast your team. And I think he saw that about himself, and so stopped doing those post-game interviews, mm-hmm. except for when they were contractually required by ESPN or whoever.
He had to pull the Marshawn Lynch out of his pocket.
That's right. I'm just here so I won't get fired.
But yeah, and then the other one, this was actually a good job by Coach K. I hate the want to puke now. But he said, I think it was some team they lost to in like 2018, 2019, one of those years. And it was Stephen F. Austin, where they hit a game-winning layup off of a steal. I remember waking up and you telling me they lost, and I ran a lap around the house. But he goes, "That's on me," was the first thing he said. And I remember me and you watching the North Carolina game when they showed that, and we were like, "What?
Way to be, Coach K.
He's grown up on us."
Oh, Mike. We miss you, Coach K.
No, we don't. But yeah.
How were those last two games, though?
Yeah, that's true. So we'll get into some more college basketball action with the net, the illustrious, all-knowing, expert-filled net.
Oh, please tell me.
Michigan staying at number one, Arizona at two, Gonzaga at three. Who's not there, Dad?
I don't know.
The Duke Blue Devils. They fall by 1 point to Texas Tech last night in a thriller of a game. They're now at number four. They are 11-1 on the season. They have 4 quad one wins and 1 quad one loss. The rest are obviously undefeated, 1-0 in quad two, 1-0 in quad three, and 5-0 in quad four. Iowa State goes down to 5, Purdue at 6, UConn at 7, BYU at 8, Vanderbilt at 9, Michigan State at 10, and the Tar Heels. Let's see where the old Tar Heels are at. If I could scroll, that would be important. Whoa, that's too far. The Tar Heels, they kind of bounced around between like 20 and 14 between the net over the last week and a half or so. They are now at number 19, 11-1 on the season. They are 3-1 in quad one. So it looks like Ohio State was a quad one team. I assume ETSU is not a quad one win. And then 1-0 in quad two. I guess one of those teams dropped down to a quad three or four, because I think we were 2-0 at one point. 2-0 in quad three, with wins over, I think, Georgetown and ETSU, and then 5-0 in quad four. So the Tar Heels continuing their short climb, hopefully by the end of the season, if we get wins over Duke and Louisville, we'll be up there in that top 10, top 5 conversation. But yeah, the experts taking their mark and saying that the Duke Blue Devils are number 4 now, which I love so much. But yeah, do you have anything else you'd like to say about college basketball before we move on?
The net is stupid.
All right, you've heard it here first. And then Michigan still destroying teams. They beat Maryland. Both teams shot the 3 ball extremely well in that one. But yeah, that's all we have for college basketball today. And then the NFL. The Chiefs eliminated. Patrick Mahomes tearing his ACL. I'm going to do my best with my non-medical degree to explain what happened to Patrick Mahomes for Dad, who I don't believe knows anything about it other than the fact that he tore his ACL.
I knew that Mahomes is out.
But yeah, so Mahomes tore the ACL, and so Mahomes' knee, as he planted the right leg gets tackled, his left leg trying to plant to stay upright, and his knee does this. His LCL goes out, and so essentially he's putting lots of strain on that LCL, tears the ACL in the process. I'm not sure how the ACL gets involved in this, but tears the ACL, and the LCL, which is, again, that ligament on the outside of the knee, is torn, is separated, actually.
Mm.
So that's no fun. So you hate to see that. But recovery normally takes 9 to 12 months. The Chiefs obviously need him for next season. Best case scenario, he'll be back in August to like week 3, 4, 5. But, or August would actually be the beginning of the season. But it's likely he'll be in late October, early November, which would be weeks 4 or 5. So that's not the only injuries. We'll get to that later. But yeah, major news for Mahomes. They do play today. No, yeah, today. And then they play at, on Christmas night, they will play the Broncos. As a Chiefs fan, we want them to lose out so they can get a top 8, 9, 10 pick. But yeah, the Colts, Phillip Rivers' first start is a 2-point loss. They will play on Monday night against, I'm blanking on who, but they play on Monday night. So that'll be a pretty huge game to keep the Colts' season alive. The injury bug strikes huge on the NFL. Micah Parsons tears his ACL. He's out for a considerable time. Mahomes' ACL and LCL. Ravens lose, I believe, Teddy Buchanan, a linebacker. Bears lose Rome Odunze, which is a pretty massive loss. Bengals lose running back Samaje Perine, and then some other guys. Derek Stingley, Tyler Lockett, and Davante Adams. Davante Adams had a hamstring injury in week 15. He did not play in week 16's win against the, or loss against the Seattle Seahawks. Many other ones, but those were just the notable ones. The Packers, I did not mention these other ones because the Packers had some guys. Christian Watson, he did play last night against the Bears in a loss. Zach Tom did not. He is a defensive tackle. Quay Walker, I'm not sure if he played or not. He's a linebacker. And then Micah Parsons, we already knew. Packers are still in the playoff hunt, trying to take the 2 seed. They can no longer do that because they lost to the Bears. They might still have a chance to win that division, but it's unlikely now. Panthers play the Bucks for a shot at the division, despite getting swept by the Saints last week. And then lots of teams eliminated from playoff contention throughout the league. So that's pretty major. Do you have anything you'd like to say about the NFL?
I like football.
Cool. So now we'll get into some more football action as the college football playoffs are, round one is over, not the whole thing. Before we get into the games, we'll talk about the new ACC football schedule, which makes zero sense to me. Have you seen anything about this?
I heard the Carolina Insider guys rant about it.
Yes, it was stupid is a good word to describe it. So, no divisions, that stays the same. 9-game conference schedule. Most teams play a 9-conference game schedule with 10 Power 4 opponents counting the conference, of course. So, if you have the 9-team schedule, which we'll get into later for those who don't have the 9-team schedule. So, let's say every team must play 10 Power 4 opponents. So, you can't play Notre Dame. Essentially, right. What that means. You have to play not Louisville. You have to play Big Kentucky,
Ten, SEC, yeah.
Or Auburn, or heck, Ohio State. You have to play somebody.
Northwestern.
Somebody who is not Notre Dame. I'm going to keep saying that name until I get punched in the face. But yeah, so I love that. But yes, and then the 2026 transition year, 12 teams will play the 9-game ACC schedule with one power conference opponent. Some of those teams being Duke, Cal, SMU, and Stanford. 5 teams will play the ACC 8-game schedule because it's a transition year. Does that make any sense to you at all?
Yeah, let's all play a different schedule in the same year and then try to tally who won.
Yep.
We played more teams, and it was sunny. I don't know. I'm not really sure how they're gonna determine who won. In the words of my high school coach, that's why we play the games. Except we're not gonna play the games. It'll be who could foresee any problems.
And those teams are being Clemson, FSU, Boston College, Georgia Tech, and the Tar Heels. 2027 and beyond, 16 teams will play the 9 ACC games with one team playing the 8-game conference schedule. two, and those the teams that would play eight will play two power conference opponents, which doesn't matter. This could lead to a very weird ACC championship tiebreakers. So let me paint the picture for you, Dad.
Please do.
Louisville has the 9-game conference schedule.
Right.
They go, let's say, 7-2 in conference play.
Right.
Oh, no, let's say they have the 8-game conference schedule. So they go 7-1 with a loss to Clemson. Clemson has the nine game schedule. They go 8-1. So now you have
one loss. They both have one loss.
Those are the two best teams. Okay.
Yep.
So 7-1 and 8-1. So Clemson's number one because they're 8-1, and Louisville's number two because they're 7-1. And then poor old SMU.
Right.
Who has battled their tail off, beating everyone except for the two aforementioned teams, Louisville and Clemson. And they go 7-2. But you see, SMU doesn't get a playoff, or doesn't get an ACC championship bid with a chance to go to the playoffs. No, they get to sit on their couch and watch SMU or watch Louisville get their doors blown off by Clemson because they didn't get the luxury of having an eight-team playoff or eight teams. It's so stupid.
Yeah, it is.
Like, okay.
It seems foolish.
It's already confusing that Duke won the ACC because of how many tiebreakers there were.
Yep.
Try explaining it after this next season.
Yeah, after they play a different number of games.
It's going to be impossible.
I mean, but let's be honest. In 2027, will the same teams be the ACC? Almost certainly not.
Probably not.
Welcome to college football in the late 2020s. It ain't going to be the same.
Not. And then college football playoff results. Two road teams winning for the first time in college football playoff history. This is also the second year we've ever had road teams playing or home games in the playoffs anyways. But yes, the Alabama Crimson Tide picking up the win, 17-point comeback against the Oklahoma Sooners. And then the Miami Hurricanes, who did not score a touchdown until the 58th minute of game time in this game, winning huge against the Texas A&M Aggies. Someone check on your local Aggie fan and your local Notre Dame fan, as they both are crying in a closet somewhere. Yeah, and then the two other games, which have almost no meaning and no surprise either. Tulane gets whooped by Ole Miss, and JMU gets whooped by Oregon. I'm
sure the ratings were off the charts.
I assure you they were not. But yeah, I went to watch this JMU-Oregon game and turned it off with about 8 minutes left in the second, or probably closer to like 12 minutes left in the second. It was like, this game's not close. It was already like 20-3 or something like that. And then JMU just couldn't close back. So I went to go watch the Packers game and then switched it back on at halftime. It was like 34-6. Or something like that. So I was like, okay, this game's over. Went back to watch the Packers game. And then turns out they ended up putting up a decent fight. They had like 500 yards of total offense. But no one's surprised. I hope this changes the minds of the college football playoff committee and puts in a BYU or a Notre Dame or a Vandy. Or heck. Like, I don't know. There's some Texas. Like, there's so many other teams you could put in that spot instead. Instead, they put in those two teams. I just disagree with it a lot. Do you have anything else you'd like to say about the college football playoff?
Nope. Didn't watch a single bit of it.
Nice.
I'll probably watch it as it gets down to like the final four or two or whatever.
So I believe New Year's Eve will be the next time we have a college football playoff game. Obviously, the bowls will continue to go, as I believe NC State won their bowl game. So congratulations to them winning the Citrus Bowl or something.
Wait, there are bowls?
I don't remember if they won. They were one of the teams that did not decline. So we now move on to the final segment of today's episode, the high school sports segment. We went in sports instead of basketball because we do have some football to talk about, as well as some realignment. 96 still on the lookout for their next head coach. I've heard rumors, but I'm not going to spread them here. And then the SCISA realignment shakes up. Don't ask me what South Carolina Institution of something A. I don't know. SA. I don't know what that stands
sports
for.
Association.
Sports Association. There you go.
I don't know what I is.
Yeah. Yeah, South Carolina.
Inter Athletic Sports.
Sports Association. I don't know. But yeah, realignment. 96 bumps back down to 1A for the first time in a handful of years. It's been... We moved here, they were still 2A, so I don't know how long it's been since we were 1A. I think Latham told me like his senior year was their first 2A year or something like that. That could be way off. Coach Latham, the assistant wrestling coach and head EMS bat football coach, which shakes up the regions a lot because Dixie, Abbeville, Calhoun Falls, and McCormick, who are all kind of local teams, and Thornwell as well, are all going to be in that kind of 1A region. Nice. So I'm curious to see how big it shakes up. But there's also, this is makes me so mad, there is now divisions in 2A. Or in 1A, sorry. There are two classifications in 1A because Skeezer refused to make a 6A. So really, if you want to think about it, 96 is like the upper echelon of 1A, which should be 2A. And then there's 2A, which should be 3A. 3A, which would be 4A. And so on and so forth. So 5A, they bumped Greenwood down to 4A. And they bumped Emerald back down to 3A like it was 2 years ago. So not extremely dumb, but pretty dumb in my opinion. I think they should.
I mean, as long as the teams are equal, I don't care if it has a 6 or a 5 or a 1.5 or whatever. Putting two classifications in 1A gives you fairer athletics in between teams that are more comparable. So,
and I
don't care if you call it 1A or 2A, but it, either way, I haven't looked very deeply at all of the breakdown, so I don't have much to comment on in terms of whether or not it was a good idea.
But I'm also very curious to see how the regions shake up in 1A.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to assume Dixie, 96, Abbeville, and Ware Shoals are going to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that's 4. I kind of like that, but at the same time, that's a really short football region schedule.
Right.
So do you put maybe a McCormick and a Calhoun Falls in there and then have Thornwell? Because Thornwell is kind of, I mean, they're not, I mean, there's probably some small Greenville teams up there that they could be in a region with, I guess, some smaller 2A teams that they could fit in with. But it's better than a couple years ago before the most recent realignment, before this one, where it was like, Chesney was in our region. Y'all went up there to a Chesney playoff game. Mm-hmm. It was not close.
Yeah, it's not a quick trip.
They were a region game. So was Mid-Carolina and Liberty. They're like an hour and a half away. So at least this time you're getting less travel. I mean, because Dixie, especially from, like, if you live in the middle of nowhere like us, you have Dixie, which is 30 minutes away, Abbeville, which is about 25 minutes away, and then McCormick and Saluda are a little bit out there, but I think Saluda is still 2A. So, like, you've got kind of all the teams kind of clumped together closely. It's like 45 minutes tops from Abbeville to Dixie, or from not Abbeville to Dixie, from 96 to Dixie. So that's a pretty major difference when instead of going to Saluda, which is 45 minutes to an hour, you're going to Dixie, who is 30 to 45 minutes. I like that a lot. I wish that we played Dixie in sports more often than we do. I feel like they're around our competitive level in most sports, except soccer, because we don't have a soccer program, but and they're state champions. But I feel like in every sport, we would match up against them well. And I'm very curious to see how this affects the girls' sports. Obviously, Abbeville coming off of the state championship, and Dixie coming off of an upper state championship loss. And in volleyball, so 96 is coming in there, 2 years removed from a state championship appearance. Curious to see how that'll shake up. And then we go to, do you have anything else you'd like to say about that?
Nope.
We then move to high school basketball. The Wildcats pick up two huge wins with wins over Mid-Carolina, 61-62. That was a big one. Might have been 60-61. I didn't double check this. That was on me. Yep. What matters is we won. Mid-Carolina, a very talented team. I'm not sure how, I mean, obviously it was a high scoring affair for a high school basketball game. I assume both teams shot the three ball exceptional as a Mid-Carolina team did when we played them at 96. And then you've got the Emerald Vikings losing to them or winning against them 57-62. This time they did have Malachi back this time. So yeah, huge, huge wins for those as the Lady Cats stay undefeated with wins over Mid and Emerald. And then they played in the Christmas tournament and won three games there playing McCormick, Dixie, and Saluda, and winning all three of those games.
Nice.
So huge games for them as well. Middle school picks up played two times, picking up wins against Greenwood Christian and then at Brewer. I have some notes I would like to share about the game at Brewer, which was a huge win for the Wildcats, as the first quarter was quite possibly the ugliest basketball I've ever watched in the Josh McDonald era. It was not good. It reminded me a lot of my days as a middle school Edgewood Wildcat. The refs were tough, but they were not the reason that either team won or lost this game. First quarter was 4-12. I believe all of those points were Easton Birch. I could be wrong. It could have been Axel Stiefel. And then lots of missed layups in the first and second quarter. Dawson and Cam did not score until the second quarter. 13-18 at halftime. The 1-3-1 was inconsistent for the Wildcats, but worked at times. Not nearly as well as it did in the second half. Foul trouble for Aiden Lewis, who I don't believe saw the floor much. Nah, he saw the floor a lot of the third quarter, but the fourth quarter, he did not play as much. Missed layups was, again, a killer, and missed free throws were a killer in the first half. That game could have been within a five-point game if we had made layups and free throws. I think it would have been a five-point in the other direction. Huge three for Dawson McDonald cuts the lead out of the third quarter. And then came out swinging as pick-and-roll bucket to Easton Birch. More missed layups. Axel Stiefel did a great job in the second and third quarter getting to the free throw line. Wildcats claimed the lead with Stiefel free throws, and then Cam Mathis would extend that from 19-18 to 22-18 with some more free throws, and I think I missed one of Axel's free throws. And then foul trouble plagued part of the third quarter as Cam Mathis would pick up, I think, two or three. Brewer could not break the press to save their lives. They had, I think, Cam Mathis at the middle, and then Dawson at the front of the 1-3-1 press, and it just killed. They could not get the ball across for most of the third quarter. Josh continued to coach to put on a clinic in the third quarter. Brewer did end the half with 7 points, but the Wildcats were able to respond with 6 unanswered to end the fourth. So it was 32-25 going into the fourth. Mathis opened up the fourth quarter with 7 of the 9 points that were scored in the fourth quarter by the Wildcats. Absolutely huge. Again, I've said this on the podcast before, Cam Mathis looked like a sophomore among boys out there yesterday. I think he did not play as good in this game, especially that first quarter hindering him. He did have 20 points, him and, I think he had 20. I think Easton had 12. And I think someone else had 8 or something like that. I think it was Dawson McDonald had 8. Then Stiefel had a few. But yeah, I mean, just phenomenally well done by the boys. I think this shows you that they can beat anybody. This was, I think, in my opinion, one of the best teams they've played. Obviously, I've not been to all the games. Obviously, Jet put up the bigger fight. But I think that this team has lots of heart. They have lots of the things you need to win. The Lady Cats also picked up a win, and this was like some sort of hoops EDU classic thing that Brewer put on, and the MVPs of those games were Emma Turner and Cam Mathis. So congrats to those guys. I no hate towards Cam. Obviously, he was a huge reason they won. I thought that personally, Easton Birch was more deserving of this because he kind of pulled them out of they were down 12 points and Easton kind of kept them in this game early. But obviously when you have a guy who go off for a 7-0 run in the fourth quarter, you kind of have to give him the MVP. Yep. But yeah, so no update on the Greenwood Eagles. But I think they're still undefeated. So yeah, that is, do you have anything you'd like to say about the Edgewood Wildcats or or high school? So yeah, that is all we have for today. Thank you all so much for watching. We hope you thoroughly enjoyed, and we will see you guys next time. The Tar Heels back in action, what, Monday? Monday or Tuesday?
Correct, Monday.
Monday against Eastern Carolina, mm-hmm. again at home, I believe, mm-hmm. In the Dean Smith Center. So we are excited to see that one. Hopefully the Tar Heels can pick up their final win of the non-conference to go to 12-1 in the non-con for the first time in a long time, I feel like.
Yeah.
Excited to watch the Tar Heels play, and go Tar Heels, and we'll see you guys next time.